This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. If you didn't catch that, that was the original theme music.
I noticed. Tony's like, I'm generally not observant, but
he's heard enough times, like, that doesn't sound right, but I'm not sure.
I sense a disturbance in the force.
There is a disturbance. Funny you should say that. This is our 200th episode. So we've been on the air for just over 4 years.
That's almost impossible.
It is. Our first episode was March 14th, 2014.
Wow.
So it's been 4 years, 200 episodes. Tony's been here for most of them.
Yeah,
we've had some guest hosts a couple times, but I'd say vast majority of them were Tony and I. And it has changed a little. I went back to listen to the first episode.
Probably not.
It was not. The audio quality was bad.
Well, of course, that's all on you. I have nothing to do with the production.
That is true.
Values.
He had nothing to do with it. I agree. It was all on me. And it sounded, compared to today, it sounded horrible. So we've upgraded the equipment since then. Tony can attest. We were wearing headsets plugged into my computer. And the studio, while in my basement, is a little bit nicer set up than we had before. So if you have listened to that first episode, you wouldn't recognize that it's the same show other than it's the same title. So we'll leave it at that. At the end, I took some of the intros from the past and kind of mashed them together to exit the show. So if you want to listen to those, you can listen through the end of the episode. I know Tony won't, but other people have. So
I've never listened to a single episode. Why should I?
Why start now?
You're talking right now.
Why start now? So a couple things happened this week that got me kind of fired up and angry, and most of them in the last couple days, believe it or not. How do I want to put this? A magazine, as you stated before we went down, a magazine nobody reads is telling people what to read. Seems ironic that nobody reads GQ. And as I said, it's Gentleman's Quarterly, but it comes out monthly. Not sure how that works.
That's always been the case, though.
Yeah, it's always been the case.
Did it ever come out quarterly?
I don't know. I don't know the history of GQ, and I'm probably not going to find out now. So I want to play a little clip about something that was published in yesterday's issue.
GQ magazine placed the Bible on a list called 21 Books You Don't Have to Read. Writer Jesse Ball said the Bible is rated very highly by all the people who supposedly live by it, but have actually never read it, calling it repetitive, self-contradictory, and ill-intentioned at times. Instead of reading the Bible, Ball recommends reading The Notebook by Agota Christoph. Also on the list were a number of classics like The Catcher
in the Rye,
Lord
Nicholas Sparks.
Of the Rings, and Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. However, USA Today reports the Bible being on the list sparked up controversy among Christians. Fox News religion contributor Father Jonathan Morris told Fox and Friends GQ's decision was foolish, noting the amount of people who have read the Bible.
In the last 50 years, 3.9 billion people have read this book. 3.9 billion Bibles have been published.
Evangelist Franklin Graham posted to Facebook calling the Bible.
Cuts off there. So they put 21 books out, but they used Huck Finn twice. So it's really only 20 books. Why?
Wait, let me guess. Huck Finn is racist.
Yes. And he said Mark Twain was racist and should be left in the time he was put there. That's interesting.
Right.
Lonesome Dove. Don't read that. I wasn't going to, but okay. Catcher in the Rye. Don't read that. Goodbye to All. I'm sorry. Goodbye to All That by Robert Graves. I don't even know what that book is.
Nope. Never read it.
The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah. Boring.
Boring.
Although Hemingway, I mean, obviously, you know, Hemingway is worth reading.
The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I don't read that one either, so I don't know. Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway. Uh-huh. Apparently, he's not a Hemingway fan.
They don't like Hemingway.
You know, not a Hemingway fan. Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy. I don't know that one. John Adams by David McCullough. I've read that. He calls David McCullough boring and dull and shouldn't even bother to read him. I don't know that I agree with that, but if you like history, he's very accurate.
Yeah, he's a pretty well-known historian.
9 and 10 are Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. The worst crime committed by Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is that it makes first-time Twain readers think Twain wrote tedious, meandering stories. He did. Okay. Let's see here. The Bible. We said read the notebook. This is embarrassing that that's even part of this discussion, but we're going to talk about
second. Actually, it's not embarrassing. It's obvious. And it,
Lord of the Rings. Shouldn't read Lord of the Rings.
You should not read Lord of the Rings. Well, that probably because J.R.R. Tolkien is also a Christian, and so he's also tedious.
Or Catch 22.
Okay.
It's a list of books you've probably heard of. Freedom by Jonathan Franzen, Life by Keith Richards. I would never read Life by Keith Richards. I don't know why.
It's a very
anybody would choose that one to
very
not to read.
Bizarre list.
Gravity's Rainbow, Slaughterhouse Five by Kurt Vonnegut.
That's kind of surprising.
Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift.
Shouldn't read Gulliver's Travels. Is that some sort of cultural?
Let's see.
Culturally unacceptable.
Let's see here. It sometimes has the virtue of occasionally being funny. It's also deeply weird, postmodern, 200 years before postmodernism, with a deeply unreliable narrator, typographic trickery, and a list of character names that would make somebody else happy. It's dumb. This got me fired up because it calls it repetitive contradictory.
Why are you getting fired up by GQ? First of all, obviously, the reason they included the Bible is because they were trolling Christians,
sure.
Like they
and they got me.
Do.
They
got you. I mean, I'm not. I'm surprised they didn't say. Not only shouldn't you read it, you should burn it. It's the most destructive book in the history of civilization. Notably, you will never ever find a list from GQ or any other progressive, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone that says, don't bother reading the Quran.
Well, that's what one of the commenters said.
Yes.
They didn't go after the Quran.
No, of course not.
Or Muslims. They went after Christianity.
Listen, they're not stupid. They know that you can insult Christians with impunity. They're not going to come and chop your head off. Okay?
Or
show up like Charlie Hebdo and machine gun your office.
You're right. So I read something last week that refuted that Christians are under attack by mainstream media. He said,
you mean attempted to refute?
Well, no, he said, I don't believe it. I don't see it anywhere. I don't see the Christians being attacked.
What
and
a surprise.
And I thought, wait a minute. Where are you from? Where are you living where you don't see this, where Christianity is attacked at all times by everyone in the media? It's unbelievable. You barely ever get a good.
In fact, to that point, and I forget exactly where it was published. It was either the New York Times Magazine or the New Yorker. Some guy just wrote an extended piece about how Chick-fil-A and their theocratic chicken was infiltrating. That's the word he used. Infiltrating New York City.
I saw that.
And the entire premise was that these icky, theologically grounded business owners are invading New York. Six Chick-fil-A restaurants going up in New York City. What's the population?
Was it 11 million people?
I don't know. And this guy is having the heebie-jeebies about, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. In fact, Nate Silver, okay, of the 538 blog, who's no Christian, tweeted immediately after this piece was run, this is why Trump won. Exactly.
Because of Chick-fil-A.
No.
Oh.
No, because of progressives like this guy.
Going after something like that.
Acting like it's a crisis because a business that happens to be owned by weird alien Christians is coming to one of the most populated cities in the world.
I believe the restaurant he's speaking of is in Midtown Manhattan, and it's on the rooftop, so it's probably one of the larger Chick-fil-A's in existence. And yeah, I did read that he was offended that they were going into the boroughs of New York and taking over. He said they play Christian music. They don't open on Sundays.
It's an invasion. You know, again, the pluralistic, highly tolerant, diverse, progressive community. But we can't have a Chick-fil-A in New York City.
I believe he also said he was offended how the line was so long to get in that people were falling for this propaganda.
Right. And apparently he thinks that they're reading Bible stories to them while they're ordering. He also had some problem with promoting cows. Right? This whole idea of eat more chicken and somehow this is also bad. I don't know if that relates
well,
to
he
like
was mad at the
raw foodism. I don't even know.
He's mad at the CEO because he doesn't accept homosexuality and he came out against homosexuality and that offended him that somebody could run a company and not be in favor of what he agrees with.
Yes, exactly.
How dare you not agree with me?
Well, not only how dare you not agree with me, and then he's highly offended that this company would dare to put a business in a city within proximity of him.
Yes, exactly.
Right? In case he might actually see the sign
while he's
on the subway. And then he'd go into convulsions or something.
That's the part that's offending me. I mean, Why does it offend you? I'm offended that they think this is okay. I'm offended that GQ
and other
people think it's okay. I think it's horrible. Oh, I think it's horrible.
I mean, they're misguided and they're hypocrites and they're bigots. They are expressly bigots. Yep. They are anti-Christian bigots. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't offend me in the least. This is exactly what I expect from these people.
It's brazen. It's very brazen to me that they would go, don't read the Bible. Like it's a piece of literature only and not the words of God passed down to man.
But here's the thing. When you say it's a piece of literature only, they're not going to believe it's the word of God. Okay, they don't believe in God.
Agreed.
So there's no way they're going to believe it's the inerrant word of God.
Fair enough.
I mean, it seems to me that your expectations of what they're going to believe, even setting aside their intentionally provocative, which is what they're doing.
Sure.
It doesn't offend me at all because this is exactly what I expect from the secular left. Mm-hmm. And again, then you add in the whole notion of clickbait, right? This isn't clicks, but it's let's generate some controversy. And again, the easiest punching bag, there's no risk whatsoever to this. Nothing is going to happen to them. Nobody, no member of the SJW Vanguard, right, is going to accuse them of attacking a victim group, an oppressed group, a marginalized group. Again, it's open season on Christians in the sense that they're fair game to be mocked and ridiculed and denigrated, and you can pretty much say anything you want.
Okay.
Now, you can't do that to any... Now, actually, one other point. I read a very interesting piece about this, and the author made the point that the people who GQ thinks that they're mocking are not actually the people they're mocking, meaning, demographically, one of the largest groups of Americans who tend to be devout Christians are Black, the African-American community, in terms of the numbers of them that are regular church attenders, say that they are devout believers, far exceeds the white population. And so this author is pointing out that and it's also predominantly women. So, in other words, when you do a survey of who are the most religious, I don't like that term, but who are the people that take their faith the most seriously in America?
Or at least on a survey. Okay,
but I mean, that's what we have to go on.
Right, agreed.
Is the data shows over and over, women and African-American women in particular. And so, they think they're mocking Jethro down at the Tuscaloosa Baptist Church in his overalls, right?
Yeah.
But they're really mocking a huge number of African Americans and women, and they apparently don't put that together.
I don't think they care. I think that's the part of the problem. They think they know what.
Well, no, because they have
everybody.
A caricature of who Christians are.
Well, it's a Trump voter. They think it's a Trump voter. So if we mock the Trump voters in any way we possibly can, and we resist, then it's okay because it's just the Trump voters. It's Jethro. You're right. They think it's a white. Battle flag, Confederate battle flag.
With his AR-15, a member of the militia.
Sitting there with bare feet and drinking a beer.
Drinking his moonshine.
Yeah, that's not who it is, but that's who they think it is. I'm offended because I'm tired of taking it. Maybe that's where my offense comes
from.
I'm tired of taking it.
Taking what, though? I mean, GQ is...
there's more to come on the show.
Nobody even... That magazine is so marginalized. Who even reads that magazine?
I mean, the whole story was online for free, so I'm not sure why you would buy a subscription.
I would love to know what their total publication numbers are, because it's...
I can't think it's high.
It's negligible.
Like I said, the whole article was online for free. Why would I buy the magazine?
Right.
There's no reason to buy the magazine. So, changing topics a little bit here, but still part of this. I have a buddy, and know the founder of a blog called Issue Autopsy, and one of their posts came out last night, said, so many Christians, so much tolerance. So the premise is Christianity isn't about tolerance. It is about love, about Jesus' love for everyone, but it isn't about tolerance of everything.
Right.
Okay? And it made me think about it. So he quotes here from Stephen Curtis Chapman, the Dancing with a Dinosaur. There's a banner waving saying tolerance will set you free. It's the latest thing. While the consequences it leaves behind are like a ball and chain. And that's all true, because he said, you need more tolerant like Jesus. Problem is, there's nothing in Scripture that says or even suggests that Jesus or any other Christian, for that matter, was tolerant of anything. Do you agree with that?
Of course.
Okay.
Jesus. I mean, first of all, that word itself is just like mush in your mouth. What does that even mean? It certainly doesn't mean anything to progressives who we pointed out over and over are tolerant only of those things with which they agree, which means they're intolerant.
Correct.
Jesus Christ was not tolerant of sin. He couldn't be. He was the Son of God, made flesh. And so, you know, was he tolerant of the money changers in the temple? You can go through. He is explicit that he is loving towards those who are sinners. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't tolerate any of their sin. Anything that is unholy, that is not consistent with his word and his person.
Right.
Right? So this is, again, this idea that people say, well, Jesus was this really groovy teacher who loved everyone. Well, he did love everyone, but he wasn't tolerant of anything that was outside of his word and what he tells us, you know, that we need to do. He's also not tolerant of other faiths, meaning he makes it very clear. If
my
you
way
want
or the
to
highway,
be saved, I am the way.
Yes.
Okay, now that's incredibly in today's parlance.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you claim absolute truth? And what do you mean you're the only way? That's so judgmental. That's so
at least so many people out.
That's so exclusionary. Yes. Correct.
Yes. So it says, obviously, we know from the account of Jesus' life and who he was, he loved everyone unconditionally. However, that is in no way infers that sinful behavior is to be tolerated. If sin was just going to be tolerated, why would we need a savior? The good
That's
point.
Correct.
You don't need a savior if you just can, anything you want to do fits the bill. So that in today's world, that's what you're hearing. Well, you know, Bill Maher. Well, can't you be tolerant of all this? Can't you? Jesus loved everybody. You can't be tolerant. They interchange the two words.
Well, right.
When
and
not.
What they really mean is, you know, what they're suggesting is that you can't coexist with these people, right? Like the bumper sticker says, you can't accept them. And of course, Christians are called not only to coexist with people, but to reach out to them, to be good neighbors, to love them.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that if you are asked, you know, is this behavior okay? What you have to say is, well, what did Jesus say about it? No, it's not. Now, does that mean then you believe yourself to be morally superior to those people? Of course not, because fundamentally all Christians should be incredibly humble, not falsely humble, but should have humility about the realization that we are abject sinners who have been saved only by grace. And so we've done nothing to deserve this. And there's God doesn't need us, right? There's nothing that we can provide to him. Doesn't matter all of our works and all of our wealth. It's all from him. He doesn't need anything from us.
Correct.
All he says is, I'm offering you this free gift. Will you take it? If you do, acknowledging that you're a sinner and that I sent my son to die for you so that I could once again be in relation with you instead of eternally alienated, if you choose that, then you will be with him in eternity. So, what Bill Maher wants tolerance to mean is we don't want to hear truth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we don't want to hear the truth spoken about this. Well, you can speak truth to someone in love, or you can speak truth to someone in judgmentalism, in morally superior, sanctimonious, like the Pharisees, right? That was what the Pharisees did.
Sure.
We're better because we know the law and we live consistent with the law and you don't. Therefore, we have some sort of special status. And over, Jesus demonstrates, no, actually, you have it completely backwards. And all the people that you're sneering at are the ones who are far closer to heaven than you are.
And that's the amazing thing. He concludes with this, and I think this is great. The next time someone questions your walk with Jesus or tries to use your faith against you, and there will be a next time if you're telling people who you are and what you believe, find a Christian and not just a believer and ask them this: can you show me in the Bible where it says As a follower of Jesus, we must be tolerant. If the answer is nowhere, sit down and talk with them for a while. If the answer is something else, walk away. Because he said earlier that you basically the devil's going to use the people around you to kind of pull you off that path. And if you start to follow that path, you're obviously going to be taken away from where you're supposed to be. I found that interesting in light of the Bible discussion with GQ and our next topic, because I felt like I'm constantly being bombarded with, you need to be tolerant of these. You have to accept them as you find them. I have somebody I work with who constantly tells me, you have to meet people where they live. You have to be whatever they are. You just have to accept it because that's what they are. And I don't, it sounds horrible, but
well,
I don't know if that's right.
The idea of meeting people where they live is not objectionable to me. Meaning you've got to go to places. In other words, you can't be insular and say,
that's not what I mean by it. That's what maybe you're taking from it. What I feel that is implied to me is, if they are doing something wrong, you just have to accept that that's who they are. They're just going to be, they're going to be homosexual. They're going to be whatever they want to be because that's how they were made. And you just have to accept that. And you can't judge them. And I'm not judging them.
Well, and I don't think it's also not our job to change.
No,
them, right.
It isn't.
That's what Jesus does.
But this person's telling me I'm a Christian and I believe homosexuality is perfectly fine in Christianity.
Right. Well, that person is wrong.
I agree.
And
that doesn't mean you can't love the person.
Right.
And I do.
And you can say that's not what it says.
No.
In the New Testament. That's just.
Doesn't say it in Old Testament either.
Well, that's true. But I mean, in terms of we're not under the Mosaic law anymore.
Correct.
So
correct.
The book for those purposes is, what does the Bible say about these things? And it's very clear that it doesn't accept
right.
those things. You know, it's fascinating to me that people, particularly those who are not Christians, want to cherry pick, you know, Jesus and enlist him in all of their crusade. What would Jesus do? Oh,
yes.
Jesus would be for progressive taxation. Jesus would be for the Paris Accords. Jesus would be. It's all of their. It's basically Jesus is going to fit into my little political box.
Right.
And again, we don't want to talk about what Jesus thinks about abortion. That's a little
correct.
Awkward.
Correct.
Pope, could you please be quiet and start talking more
about... Well, let's talk about it in light of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, I think Jesus loves Donald Trump, but I don't know that Donald Trump has followed a path of moral behavior throughout his life, even today maybe, nor have any of us. I'm not saying
no.
that. But he's been married 3 times. The Bible's pretty clear on... adulterous relationships. I believe Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump had a relationship
sure.
outside of his marriage vows. So, you know, we get pastured with that. You know, the Democrats will say, oh, look, you got Donald Trump. And you say you're a Christian. What the heck? You know, what's going on here? That's a problem for me because I don't want to stand behind him as a moral with moral rectitude, but I'm also a little concerned that.
But you're not standing. We've talked about this.
We have.
Standing
I'm just bringing up the
him to vouch for his character.
Right.
Again, we're making a binary choice in an election for a secular leader.
Correct.
Okay. We're not electing.
But this is the questions we get constantly.
Right. And I've pointed out as well. You never get the question if you were a Christian and voted for Hillary, would that be okay?
Would that be better?
Like somehow that never even arises. Like you get the question all the time. How could you be a Christian and vote for Trump? Isn't the same question applicable to how could you be a Christian and vote for Hillary? She has more baggage than he does.
At least equal, if not more.
Right.
Yes.
Now what they really mean is, well, she doesn't act like he does.
Correct.
You're right. She pretends, you know, she puts on a facsimile of, I'm nice. No, she's not. Everything you've ever read about Hillary Clinton is she's profane, yeah. She's cruel, mm-hmm. she disdains those who help her, the Secret Service. And then we won't even talk about, you know, the multitude of corrupt endeavors that she and her husband have embarked on between their foundation, all of their graft, all of it. So it's interesting that the only time that question gets posed, it's about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You could pose that question about Hillary Clinton in a heartbeat.
You sure? You could do it a lot.
But nobody ever asked that question, right? It's almost
because
it's okay for Christians to vote for her. Why?
Yeah, I mean,
under what analysis?
You bring up the good point because it was evangelicals voted for Trump overwhelmingly. Yes, because the other option was not good either. You know, if they had to vote, choose one, and not everybody did. I know that, but if they had to choose one. She wasn't a better choice. She was a different choice, but not better. Maybe a very similar choice, truthfully.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they're
and by the way, a Christian can defend. I don't have a problem with a Christian voting for Hillary Clinton. I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, but that's because I think that all the things that she stands for politically are misguided and destructive. And we've talked about this. A Christian should not be saying Donald Trump is an example of someone who's a good Christian.
Correct.
Okay, that's not true. That's self-evidently false.
But we have some
false.
Of those people, some prominent evangelicals saying those things.
And that's
problematic.
They should be called out for that because that is clearly not the case. And so now what you're doing is you're warping your Christianity to justify support for a political leader.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yes.
But I have no problem with a Christian saying, I actually find Donald Trump's behavior to be reprehensible. However, when faced with the choice in a ballot box between imperfect door number A and imperfect door number B, or lesser and greater evil A and B, I voted for what I thought was the lesser evil, knowing that it was evil in a way, right?
Moral relativism.
That's how elections work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they almost have to. We're never going to get a perfect leader. I mean, morally upright leader, because nobody is. You can get better ones than what we've given options on. But I think inherent to the position is a little amoral behavior at times. I think the craving of that role leads you, it doesn't always, but it can lead you to behavior that's probably not upright and that most people would not say is great.
Well, and the other thing I always hear is, you know, you look at Barack Obama, compare him with Donald Trump, and of course he was, you know, he's a statesman and he's articulate and he has creased pant legs and he's a great father and husband. And by the way, I have no reason to doubt that he is a great father or husband. And so the idea is that, you know, now there's a man that a Christian should support. But my rejoinder to that would be, but what about his policies?
Yeah.
And we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the most radically pro-abortion president we have ever had in our history.
Mm-hmm.
That is beyond dispute. The man voted against the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. Okay? he's in favor of killing babies who were born due to a botched abortion and allowing them to be killed after birth.
Think about that, folks.
So again, so when you talk about how can a Christian vote for Donald Trump, well, you're talking about his mean tweets and his petulance and his narcissism. Well, what about a guy that advocates unrestricted abortion up to and including what I would consider to be infanticide? How does that work?
How is it not murder? It's a botched abortion. Right, you're outside the body.
No one ever wants to focus on that part. It's just, well, look at his jutting jaw and his debonair erudition.
It's an appearance of propriety, much like Hillary Clinton. It's an appearance of something they want you to believe, which isn't necessarily the whole picture. It's a view.
All of these things matter.
Yeah. Character does matter. For those who've written in and called in, character does matter. Unfortunately, you have to give us somebody with character to be able to vote for them. In that, we weren't given that option. And very often we're not given that option. So, you know, if the Republicans or the Democrats would like to win power and you want to get it from the evangelicals, give us somebody with character, somebody morally upright and upstanding. If you can do that, I will vote for that person. I don't know who that is.
I just fundamentally don't buy the argument at its fundamental level that Trump is this. He's just abnormal. He's so beyond the pale. Well, how is he any worse in ways that matter, character, than Bill Clinton?
He isn't.
How is he any worse than JFK?
He isn't.
I mean, we can go down the list of presidents. We want
Warren
to play
G. Harding.
This game.
Yep.
Right? So I just reject this idea, you know, because the notion is, yes, everyone is flawed and everyone has these, but Trump is, he's an outlier. Really?
He's not.
And really what that's based on is because, yes, he says things that are rash and intemperate, and this tweeting that everyone can't stand, although I argue that there's a method to that madness because it drives the media crazy.
And it does.
And if you want to tell me that he's the least knowledgeable president we've ever had, fine.
Maybe.
I mean, the guy doesn't know much about policy.
Neither Miller Fillmore.
Right. But
or James Buchanan.
I simply don't agree with the argument that he is such an outlier that he is somehow separate and apart in his depravity from any other president that's gone before. I think, first of all, I think it's just historically inaccurate.
Well, I think it's historically inaccurate, and I also think it's because there's more media available about him. If you went back to the 1850s and you had the same sort of Twitter and media and internet and TV, I believe you would find the same issues.
Well, there's more media about him, and the media are his enemy.
Correct. Well, that's, yeah.
Maybe. So in other words, the media that is being disseminated is already tilted in a way that it is intended to portray him. By the way, sometimes he deserves to be portrayed in this fashion.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
everything is portraying him in the worst possible light.
Correct.
Everything is heinous. Everything is egregious. Everything is a crisis. Everything is the worstest ever thing that has ever happened.
That's true.
So when
in that
you,
light, you're always going to look
so
bad.
You have a proliferation of media, and all of it is intentionally geared to making him look like the worst president ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I would think the Bill Clinton thing is a, well, not exactly the same, more of an accurate representation. He was not portrayed by the media poorly, even as he's being impeached. No. They were still defending him.
No, they defended him and said, look at you sexual prudes. Again, you Christians, get out of the bedroom. What does this have to do with his job? Stop with your hang-ups about sex, right? We heard all of that stuff. Journalists saying, you know, I will perform certain acts for Bill Clinton because he's kept abortion legal, right?
Yeah.
Definitively saying, hey, as long as you're on our team, we're going to forgive you for anything, buddy. That doesn't apply to Donald Trump.
No.
Because they detest him, and he's not on their team.
Correct. Let's move on to something else that angered me this week. I know, it's been a busy
we
week
have
for me.
An angry week, Chad.
So,
and nothing to do with restaurant service.
No, not actually. I do have something about a restaurant, but it's not about the service. So this Friday is Don't Speak Friday. And I don't mean the No Doubt song from the 90s.
Oh, good pop culture reference there.
I thought you'd like that. So the LGBTQ community is talking about a student-sponsored, not teacher-sponsored, although it's organized by...
Wait, how is it student-sponsored? It's already being organized by...
Yeah, they got a website, you got
to
register.
Sounds very grassroots.
Put up
to
posters
me.
And everything. To talk about gay and lesbian-friendly policies at schools. So you are to register and tell your principal... Tell your classmates, put up posters, get T-shirts, and don't speak the entire day on Friday. Now,
okay.
I tried to go to the website just to see where these places are. They won't tell you.
What do you mean the places are? Where the schools?
With schools that are doing it.
I thought it's supposed to be nationwide.
Well, it is nationwide, but you have to register individually, and they'll communicate with you individually.
I
chose not to register, obviously.
Yes.
But they won't tell you which schools are participating. I guess if you've seen signs, you know. If you haven't seen signs, then you don't know.
Well, wait. But who is the representative at the school who has to say it is participating? Is that the principal?
No. Each student is to talk to the principal individually and say, I will not be speaking today on Friday at all. In class, for any reason, I will not be speaking.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is put out by, sort of, by the Reverend Laurel A. Dykstra, who is an Anglican pastor. And these are some of the things she said in her previous statements regarding trans-friendly preschools.
Okay.
Okay.
Trans-friendly
preschools.
We have trans in
preschool. She would like this.
Okay.
She says a gender binary system is harmful to everyone. I don't know how, but apparently it is. She moralized that it's enough for classrooms, teachers, and schools to be open or non-judgmental. They need to be actively trans positive. So you can't just say,
we're beyond tolerance, Chad.
Dykstra recommended that when talking to preschoolers, teachers should say things like, well, most men have penises, but some don't, and some girls grow up to be men. Okay. She urged teachers to encourage kids to question their assumptions. How do you know that that person is a woman? Could a man wear a dress? She instructed teachers to call children by the name and pronouns they choose. Remember, this is preschool.
Right, of course. The indoctrination needs to begin basically when they come out of the womb. I mean, the earlier the better.
That's what she wants.
Right.
She instructed teachers to call children by the name. I'm sorry. She recommended accessorizing classrooms with a tranny teddy, having a non-gendered toy doll puppet, Do not use pronouns and give this creature a variety of gendered clothing, such as a skirt and tie. If asked, say, oh, Binker isn't a boy or a girl. She suggested having a Butch Femme Day. Why not teach kids language like Butch and Femme as an alternative to boy, girl, or male, female? You could have dress-up days to play deliberately with gender, like Fabulous and Fearless Day or Capable and Campy. She encouraged teachers to invite a drag performer or transsexual person who would be willing to share their story in a photo album.
In preschool.
Preschool.
Right.
When reading picture books to preschoolers, Dykstra recommended switching pronouns, avoiding them altogether, or using alternative pronouns. I think there's one more thing here. She rationalized using deceit in the face of parental opposition for stealth practitioners, i.e. teachers in a transphobic setting.
Transphobic, yes.
These classroom suggestions can be implemented without fanfare to create a more and just and welcoming classroom. These were made 13 years ago by this woman, uh-huh, who's still preaching for preschool.
Are we sure she's a woman?
I see a picture of her. She is a woman. Well, okay, she is an openly lesbian woman,
well,
but she is a woman.
I'm not even sure why she should be able to call herself a woman.
Well, that's a good point.
How are we to know that she's a woman? Isn't she some sort of ungendered biped? I don't know.
So here's the things they want you to do to register. Register your participation. Inform your school's administration of your plans to participate. Do not tell the school board. I don't know why, but I guess they don't want the school board to shut it down.
Sure.
Hold a day of silence meeting where you hold an open GSA meeting or meeting specifically designated to get everybody organized. Hang up posters and flyers. Make an announcement to the student body over the PA system. You can't read the Bible over the PA system, but we can make an announcement about this event. Talk to your teachers. Say you have the right to be silent at school and hand out the ACLU letter that says you can do this.
Uh-huh.
Gear up. Get your shirts. Have a plan in case of pushback. Some schools may probably prevent you from doing this. If this happens,
yes,
if this happens, reach out to Lambda Legal, and they will step in for you. Pass out speaking cards. In the days leading up to the Days of Silence, print out and distribute Days of Silence speaking cards, which explain why participants are being silent on the day. Be silent. And lastly, break the silence together. Plan a time and place where Day of Silence participants can gather at the end of the Day of Silence and talk about why.
Yes.
This is what schools and colleges, they want from K through 12 and colleges to participate. Now, I don't know how many are going to do it.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be a decent amount. I'm sure the administration in many of the schools will think it's fabulous and go along. You know, I would hope that, you know, if one of these kids came in and I was a principal and they said, today I'm not going to be speaking in class, I would say, well, that's fine. If you're called on and that's part of your grade,
that's a zero.
Then that's a zero. Right.
You have to participate, sure, to be here. And if you're not going to participate,
right,
that's
now,
fine.
Now, if you're not called on and you want to sit quietly the whole day, who cares? Fine.
Yeah.
Do what you want. But if it's part of classroom participation that's required and you're not going to do it, there's going to be a consequence. You're going to get a zero for the class.
Yep.
And that's fine.
And leave it at that.
Teach them that your stance
exactly
has potential consequences.
Exactly. So I know my daughter's school is not participating because she has a presentation on Friday. So she has to give the presentation to another grade. So I know that they're not participating. I don't know if you even wear.
Right. And the other thing is, if, you know, the whole class does this, well, you can't really have a learning environment.
No.
So what I would say is, if there's enough students that are doing this, you're all going to go to detention because at that point, it has become a disruption.
Mm-hmm.
You are not allowing the class to be conducted in a way where people, it's an educational environment.
And that's what
they
want. If
the teacher wants to call on people and you're just sitting there, well, then you're just wasting the entire class period. So great. Mm-hmm. Go sit in silence in detention.
Yeah, I think they want to cause a disruption.
Of course
they do. I
think
that's the whole
purpose
of this.
Right. And then they want to claim that, look at this, the transphobic overlords have prevented Silent Day. And the thing is, they will never stop.
No.
They will never,
never
ever stop with this.
Never enough.
Rod Dreher, a really good writer who's a Christian, he calls this the law of merited impossibility. And what he means by that is when you tell someone, you know, this is what's going to happen, right? Could you have imagined 5 years ago this craziness? And so when you would tell someone 5 years ago, this is what's going to be happening, they would say, that's impossible. But you know what? If it does happen, you deserve it. That's the law, right? That's the law of merited impossibility.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that's he named that. That's his sort of phrase, and I like it because the idea is they will continually deny you're being ridiculous with these slippery slope arguments that people would be fighting about trans bathrooms. Whoops, never mind, right? Don't be absurd. Nobody cares about, you know, polygamous relationships. No one is suing for – they're already doing it, right? Yeah. So everything that they claim is never, ever going to happen in 6 months – you have this kind of nonsense,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, you do. You do. Well, I know it's already happening with my daughter because we go for a walk and she's picking up trash, which in itself is not a bad thing. But she goes, we got to pick this up because we got to save the planet. And,
right.
And Sunday was Earth Day. And I said, Earth Day is a made-up holiday for hippies. It is not a real holiday.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, if you want to pick up trash,
that's
more
great.
Power to you.
Yeah.
Great. It'd be helpful if people didn't throw trash out their windows when they're driving by. That would fix the problem right there, but that's probably never going to happen. But if you want to pick up trash, great. But don't moralize. We got to save Mother Earth. When Gaia, we've got to save Gaia. I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous. Pick up the trash, put it in the trash, recycle it if you want to recycle it. That's great. That's it. But don't make a big holiday out of it. It's not a holiday.
Well, and again, from a Christian standpoint, conserve and protect God's creation. Absolutely.
Sure.
We should not be littering. We should not be intentionally destroying the landscape,
correct.
Right? But to have this, see, that's not what they're saying.
But we're supposed to subdue all the creatures,
right, that is exactly
and the land.
Correct. Yes, of course. So, you know, the notion that factories are bad, cars are bad. Of course, there's whole groups that say humans, we if only the humans would all be gone,
sure.
Earth would be fantastic.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Except for them, I think.
But they also believe in dinosaurs, and we had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So they all died because of something else.
These kind of crusades are going to – they are unrelenting.
Mm-hmm.
They will not cease. If they're thwarted in one area, they simply move on to another area. And, in fact, there was an article in our local paper just today about a 10-year-old girl – who was doing her own protest over gun control. 10 years old,
okay.
Apparently very, very smart girl. And she has decided, you know, she's on the vanguard for gun control. And you know what my reaction to that was? It was actually more sadness than anything.
Mm-hmm.
That this kid, who's cute little girl, instead of actually having a childhood where she should be doing things, I don't know, playing with her friends. No, she's out there at the forefront of the gun control movement. This is because adults are using her
mm-hmm.
as a prop
mm-hmm.
and a tool of their political and ideological agendas.
Was she at the state capitol protesting?
She was outside of her school with a sign that she made, you know, because and so again,
she should be in school.
I find that to be perverse. Adults and parents
yeah.
that use kids to further their political agendas and indoctrinate them.
Mm-hmm.
That is wicked.
It is. It is. That's very true. So our next segment is called No Intelligence, and it means everything it sounds like. Devin Nunes of the Memo fame was on the talk shows on Sunday, and I'm going to play a clip here from Lou Dobbs, who's got a clip of Devin Nunes, and I want to talk about it. So let's play the clip here.
House Intel Chairman Devin Nunes revealed there was no official intelligence used at all to start the FBI investigation into the Trump campaign.
This is really important to us because a counterintelligence investigation uses the tools of our intelligence services that are not supposed to be used on American citizens. So we've long wanted to know, well, what intelligence did you have that actually led to this investigation? So what we found now, after the investigators had reviewed it, is that, in fact, there was no intelligence.
No intelligence, none whatsoever. Chris Farrell, Director of Investigations and Research for Judicial Watch, joins us tonight. Chris, to me, there's no surprise in what Nunes said. On the other, it's a different articulation of the same thing. The GOP memorandum said the same thing. As a matter of fact, Senate Intel said the same thing. There's nothing. So why in the world do these folks in the Senate leadership, and the House leadership persist?
There's no good explanation, Lou. I mean, what I think Nunes did today was just make a simple declarative sentence out of his report. That's what really counted. So even if it was sort of a restatement of what we already knew, it was clear and direct, and it brings up probably the most important fact of all this nonsense, which is that there was no real intelligence. There was cooperation between Hillary Clinton and the DNC via a couple of cutouts with the Russian intelligence service. You want to find collusion, look right there.
There's
So if, for those of you who weren't paying attention, you need an actual intelligence source to begin an investigation at the Department of Justice. Devin Nunes was saying on the show that there was nothing, there's no reason any of this information should have gotten from the FISA court to the FBI or from the intelligence, because nobody had it. None of the Five Eyes, which is the big five intelligence organizations across the world, had any of this information. So an investigation was started based on no intelligence. Nobody had anything going. Does that surprise you? I mean, it jives with everything we've been saying, but that's a bold statement that
But we knew this. I've said it's been obvious for a year and a half. This is all, honestly, it's the greatest political dirty trick ever perpetrated. Now, I don't even think that Hillary and the DNC and all the Obama operatives at CIA and FBI thought in their wildest dreams that it would work this well.
No.
I also don't think, ironically, you know, they're so worried about the Russians. I mean, not really. This is their pretext. If you wanted to do anything to disrupt our political, Putin could have come up with something this good.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
So we've known from the beginning this started, as he said, because they needed a reason. They needed an excuse. They needed someone to blame for how kind mistress, the anointed, could have possibly lost the election that was in the bag.
Yeah.
Right? This was hers. This was her glorious achievement. It was predestined. Kreskin and Nostradamus and everyone. All the polls said she will be president. She wasn't. We have to explain this. How are we going to do this? I know. Let's concoct a fable about Russians.
But they did it. They started it before the election. The election they thought they were going to win.
Right.
Does that seem odd?
No, because I think these people are so malicious and so ruthless.
Plan B, you mean?
No, not even Plan B. Oh. Is that whether Trump won or not, they wanted to destroy him anyway. So,
for future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So what did we have? The whole thing started because we have this dossier. And as they pointed out, the dossier is a complete work of fiction. Mm-hmm. By the way, interesting article by Byron York this week where he points out that the new standard for evaluating the dossier is not whether any of it has been proven, which it hasn't. It's whether Trump has disproved it. Right? So now,
guilty until proven innocent.
Exactly. So if they frame it this way, there is no evidence that Trump has, no one in the Trump administration has disproven any of the allegations.
Can't prove a
relating
negative.
To the fact that he was abducted by Russia, you know, the KGB when he was a child. So that's the standard now. You have to disprove. Is that how it works?
Shouldn't. But
James Comey has said and has never recanted unverified and salacious information. We take this to the FISA court to do surveillance on American citizens. We brief Donald Trump on this unverified and salacious document. We don't tell him that it's funded by his political enemy and the DNC. We're not sure why we didn't tell him or whether we should have told him.
Slipped our
like
mind.
George Costanza. Was that wrong?
Someone
needs to tell me at the other FBI I worked at. That was fine, not to mention these things. And then what do? We then intentionally leak these things to the press to create a news story where one didn't even exist. Comey repeatedly tells Trump, you're not under investigation. Trump says, can you maybe tell the public, because the Washington Post and the New York Times, no, I can't actually do that. And then when I'm fired, I leak classified memos, which I was only keeping about Donald Trump and not about conversations with Andrew McCabe or anyone else. To start
or Loretta Lynch or
to start Robert
anything.
Mueller's investigation.
And that's the ironic thing, because if you brought up the Comey memos, there's nothing in there that I've read that in any way, shape, or form warrants an independent counsel. Anything he wrote didn't say, you know, I thought he told me to, you know, stop investigating Michael Flynn, but I didn't stop it. Well, so who cares? You didn't stop it anyway.
If you read the memos, they actually vindicate Trump.
I think they do.
They really do.
And I think that's the ridiculous part is Comey thinks they help him. He actually thinks he looks good in these memos. He looks like an idiot to me.
Comey is the most unself-aware person in America. I read an article today, and they I think it was by Conrad Black, who writes it occasionally for National Review, and he compared Comey's book tour to the Japanese battleship Yamamoto. Do you know the story about the Yamamoto?
Vaguely, vaguely.
They steamed out to prevent the invasion of Okinawa with no air cover, and 306 American planes bombed it into oblivion.
That didn't take long, did it?
I thought that's actually a very good comparison.
Wow. So he's just out there getting hit left and right. And I don't blame – couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
No.
And I'm, again, not a huge Trump fan, but Comey has just gone out of his way to be stupid about this. I don't understand.
Well, even people that used to defend Comey are now recognizing that he needs to just go away and shut up. Because the more that people see him – the more that they sympathize with Trump.
Less credible he becomes every time he opens his mouth.
By the way, not just less credible. Now, again, you would think that someone who was the former FBI director and a lawyer would realize this. He is putting himself in jeopardy of perjury charges because he is saying things that are completely contradicted by his prior sworn testimony.
Maybe he doesn't know videotape exists.
Yeah, I don't know. Or transcripts or anything like that.
Because you're right. Everything he's saying doesn't sound like what he told Congress last year.
He's now in a he said battle with his second in command, Andrew McCabe. Mm-hmm. So this is going to get very interesting. If James Comey has any good friends or advisors,
they
should be telling him, James,
do you think he takes anybody's advice but his own?
No. He's at some level of Olympian.
He's much like Trump. He believes himself to be infallible in all things. So McCabe's going after him. What do you think about the DNC suing the Russians and Trump for losing the election?
Is there anything more desperate?
Wow. I've never heard of such a thing.
They just won't.
And 10 John Does that they can't name. You're like, what?
The resistance. I mean, they're just going to keep flailing.
Well, what do they expect to get out of it? Do you think they're going to, we're going to rerun the election. Hillary won.
Yes.
10 years later. Like she was president, but it's like taking somebody out the national championship trophy.
It's just a child having a perpetual tantrum. Oh my,
what? That's unbelievable. What are you going to get from this? Nothing. Except publicity, I guess. But
I think the reality is starting to sink in among at least those that are barely coherent on that side.
Yeah.
They're realizing we ain't got collusion. That's done.
Yeah.
We don't have obstruction. We're going to hang our hat right now on Stormy. Hope that Mueller. Oh, I'm sorry. The Southern District of New York. It has nothing to do with Mueller.
Sure.
there's going to be some campaign finance thing. And again, the best part, which we mention all the time, is they haven't worked out what they're going to do when Mike Pence becomes president.
I'm sure they must have some dirt hidden away about Mike Pence.
He's going to be impeached for not having dinner with women that aren't his wife or something. That certainly sounds like a high crime.
They're
going to
find something with him. It all boils down to no intelligence, lack of intelligence, no intelligence to get to this point. And somehow we're at this point. And, you know, Jeffrey says he's going to resign if Rod Rosenstein gets fired. Why? What? Who cares?
Who, Sessions?
I'm sorry, Sessions. Why did I say Jeffries? Sessions says he might resign if Rod Rosenstein gets fired. I'm like, why?
Well, if Trump, you know, and again, Trump is not always smart.
Why did I say Jeffries?
If someone is, right now, in my view, even though they're never going to stop, right? I mean, their entire goal is to remove him by any means necessary. And that's
do you think Sessions said that, though? And why would he say that?
Sessions might have said that. And I think it's Trump should just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Don't fire anybody. Again, he has the right to do that.
Sure.
But
politically,
he's winning. Okay. Yeah. He's winning in the sense that they are flailing now for anything. They're down to, again, raiding a lawyer's office, apparently in the hope that somehow Cohen is going to flip. And again, what's he going to flip over? Meaning, what's he got?
Yeah. Well, maybe he had something, but I don't know what it is, and there's nothing that's come out so far.
So I think, you know, and sometimes Trump is – not sometimes. Often Trump is his own worst enemy. He needs to allow this just to continue. Now, again, I've said before, you know, that – see, because my sense now is, which is a little different than before, tactically, this is all leading up to the midterms.
Sure.
All right. So now what the people on the inside of this have to decide, and many of them already know, Mueller's team already knows, when do we wrap this up? In other words, we don't have collusion. We don't have obstruction. And that's been obvious from the beginning, because to your point, they never stopped the investigation.
Yeah. So it's a collusion.
And Trump can fire Comey at his whim.
Yeah.
So that's, as a legal matter, that's a farce. We don't have that. Okay, we're going to do this Stormy thing, strong arm Cohen, hope we find, whatever, unpaid parking tickets or something, something campaign finance violation. And by the way, we talked about this. Trump can pardon everyone anyway. Mm-hmm. So the end game was always, how do we destroy this guy? Now, the question is, if we allow the midterms to go forward and we don't prevail, you know, remember, the consensus now is the Democrats are going to take the House. And I think that's still probably more likely than not.
Correct.
Although those dynamics are not getting better for them. They looked a lot better about 3 months ago. If they don't take the House, then what do? Because now they can't, you know, they can't impeach. They can't file the scrolls of impeachment, the two scoops of ice cream, whatever else. Now they're stuck until 2020.
Then it goes on. It doesn't end.
So in other words, is someone saying to Mueller, we need to drop our report, okay, and put all of our innuendo and all of our – how we're going to wordsmith this thing to basically say, well, there's nothing there, but Trump is the awfulest, most terrible and heinous, egregious Kaiser who has ever ruled the American Reich, right? And so the media can at least use these snippets from the report to claim that there's been some sort of high crime and misdemeanor. What's the timing of this? The big gamble for them is, if we don't do something big before the midterms and we don't win, it's over, right? Operation Remove the Destructor is over.
I think you're partially right. I think there's a movement right now with the Democratic operative to fund and impeach Trump. And a lot of the representatives running the other way.
Yeah. Steyer has been funneling hundreds of millions towards this.
So there's a $40 million campaign right now going on to impeach Trump. And everybody running, Democrats are going, whoa, 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 because it's not playing well with the electorate. They're going, yeah, no.
They don't want to talk about that.
No, so don't bring that up. I think that's where they run the danger. I disagree a little bit. I think they don't drop any report until after the midterm elections, hoping they win. If they win, they'll drop whatever report they want, and it'll probably be inflammatory. If they don't get control of the House again, I think this goes on for another 2 years, 3 years.
Oh, it's still going to go on, because what else do they have to do?
Well, that's the thing.
It's pathological. But my point is that once the Democrats do not regain control of the House, the resistance is over. Now, they're going to keep over, meaning it has no ability at that point.
But they can still hold up judge appointments.
Well,
they can
try.
They're still doing it.
Well, they're doing it with the cooperation of the spineless worms in the GOP.
But they're allowing them to continue to hold up all the – I mean, we're a year and a half in, and he still doesn't have all his appointments approved. It's ridiculous.
This is why I've said before – The GOP, they deserve to lose.
Well, they're making every effort to do so.
You guys were given Congress, and I understand we've talked about the fundamentals in the Senate because of reconciliation. There's not a supermajority. There's a whole host of things that they can't do, but there's a ton of things they can do. And one of them is, and you can bet that Harry Reid, you could say this for him, the guy knew how to run roughshod over his opposition. Sure. All of these appointments would be done. They would be through. Just Mitch McConnell would say, We're done with this.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to change the rule.
Yeah.
Everything is going to be. But for some reason, I simply don't understand.
Well, they're obstructionists because they don't want these judges appointed because they're there for life. They don't want them appointed.
No. I understand why the Democrats are obstructing this.
But I don't understand why the GOP isn't.
I mean, they have to be kind of belly laughing, thinking, good grief, these guys can't even beat us when they have all the power.
Well, the GOP is playing by the rules that they've set up. And the Democrats say, well, the rules only matter when it's in our favor. When it's not in our favor, we'll just throw out the rules.
Of course.
We don't care. We're going to do whatever helps us. That's the problem for me. It's all a mess, and we'll see if they come up with something. I don't think there's anything to come up with, but I think the report's still going to sound like he's the worst human being ever existed.
Believe me.
Regardless of what they find.
Look, I'm sure this is already halfway drafted, and it's all going to be.
But how long do they let it go? So let's say the Democrats don't regain the House. Isn't somebody going to say, how long does it take you to investigate? How much money are we going to spend on this farce It's almost a year now, over a year, almost a year now. Are
well,
we going to spend 3 years?
Remember, what also hasn't dropped yet is the IG report.
Right.
Okay, so that's going to be a huge problem for them as well.
Well, yeah.
Because
they're going to say it's biased because the GOP
well,
is running it.
They can say whatever they want. This is Obama's guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's fine. Of course they're going
to say. Are we assuming the IG report's going to say there's nothing? Or are we?
Well, no, I think the IG report is going to say there's a whole bunch of really potentially illegal things going on with the entire Clinton investigation, all that
but not,
stuff.
But not for Trump.
Oh, not for Trump at all.
Okay.
That's my point. Is
yeah.
that, you know, we've already seen the snippets of the IG report relating to McCabe.
Right.
Okay, which is causing all these convulsions. He repeatedly lied.
He's going to sue Trump for defamation.
Right, he's going to sue Trump for defamation, but even though the report actually proved that you lied.
Yes.
You leaked
it's,
information.
It's defamation because it makes me look bad.
Right. So, no, there's more of that to come on a much broader scope.
Okay.
That's going to be another political problem for the resistance because now all of their folks are going to be on the hot seat in terms of what was your involvement.
Wouldn't you love to see Comey spending 2 years for perjury?
Yeah, James Comey, listen, the man is a disgrace. And look, if he perjured himself, and I think that he did.
I do.
And if he engaged in unethical conduct, and I think he did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't get in prison for unethical conduct.
No, but you do for perjury.
But you do for perjury, and you also do...
Talk to Ollie North.
You also do for... You know, essentially, potentially using the intelligence gathering services of this country and the FBI to illegitimately attack and attempt to destroy an opposing candidate.
That's not kosher.
That's
not, there's got to be something wrong there somehow. I don't know what you classify, but it's got to be bad. So we'll leave that for future. I did want to talk about the restaurant thing real quick. So I went to a nice restaurant, Texas Roadhouse. I like my steak. Good
now,
food.
You okay? I have to stop you though because the true culinary elite would scoff at you for claiming that Texas. By the way, I like Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah. What would you say is the true culinary elite would go
well,
to?
They would go to around here.
exactly.
Like the Mill or okay. Devon or
Devon's okay. I've eaten at Devon. It's okay.
Yeah. The Texas Roadhouse, Chad, is a
I like
chain.
To throw my peanut shells on the floor,
it is a
okay?
a chain restaurant.
Whatever. That means
yes.
I get a good
but
steak.
But I actually like Texas Roadhouse. They have good food.
So food's good. Service is good. Not a service issue. I don't like how they pack you in. So if you've ever been to Texas Roadhouse. So if you are not at a booth.
Okay.
And
but they're all booths, though.
Well, no, they have some tables. But they have some half booth, half table. And then tables. So if you go to any of the corners of the restaurant, it's booth and then tables. And they put what normally would have a booth on one side of the wall and a table booth on the other side of the wall. They cram in another set of tables in between that. So when somebody sits, when there's nobody walking there, nobody sitting there, it's fine. As soon as somebody sits down at the table, they push their chair out and you're literally rubbing up against somebody's back or face trying to get through here. And it's not comfortable.
You're actually rubbing up against their face.
Well, if they turn their face to look, you say, excuse me, and they turn, they're right there. It's very uncomfortable. And I'm like, why do you need to cram some? And there were empty tables. That was the part that bothered me. There were empty tables in other parts of the restaurant, and it looked like 1,000 people working there, and yet they still jumbled us all together so that you couldn't even get out of my – I couldn't get out of my seat to get up to leave without bumping into people. That shouldn't happen. That's just too many people
yes,
crammed into
that,
a spot.
That is, that
food
is
good.
Many.
Service is good. No complaints about either
you
one of those
You know
what
things. Has happened to me multiple times at Texas Roadhouse, which you would think.
You get the wrong meal?
No,
they
no.
give you an extra meal.
They ran out of A1.
How's that happen?
I don't know. At a steakhouse.
A steakhouse.
The one
I mean,
they
don't
thing,
use it, but how do you run out of it?
The only thing that would be worse is running out of steak.
That would be bad. You got to have steak.
But yeah, they ran out of A1. Like, well, I mean, it's not that hard to stock. I mean, don't you have like a 1,000-gallon drum in the back of A1?
You would think just fill up the bottle with
yes,
the generic
fill up your
A1. Bottles. So when you go in, if you've never been to Texas Roadhouse, you can pick your steak. And other places do this too.
I never pick my steak.
But I noticed something tonight because I never look at that window. I just go,
yeah.
take a steak. They had no filet mignon on to pick. It was sirloin, T-bone, everything, but they had no filet as an option to choose. I'm like, I asked them, I said, why not? Well, a lot of people don't like the price of the filet, so we just give them the filet, and then nobody really chooses it. We found that they don't pick it. I'm like, but that's the one I would pick every time, and I want the best piece. I don't understand why it's...
What do you mean they don't like the price? The price is going to be the same thing on the menu.
It is, but it's they don't get special cuts. So, like, you can get a 12-ounce T-bone, but you can get a 6-ounce or an 8-ounce filet. That's it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's market price, and it's a little more expensive to get, so people don't usually choose it.
I have a quick ending travel story. Coming back, I had to work.
Warren Buffett, right?
Flight out to out to Nebraska. Had to come back. Flew into BWI. Been to BWI many times. However, when I was leaving, I was on the phone, work stuff. Of course, I'm paying attention. It's through my speakers. I'm not,
sure.
Yeah.
He was texting and driving.
Yeah, no,
folks.
I don't text and drive. I can't. I'm going so fast that I have to be very vigilant about the police.
The text would get there after he got there.
So I'm talking to someone on my hands-free thing, and, you know, I have my nav on, and I know how to go. You go on 695 where we live, we go up 83. Easy.
Yes.
Well, I'm not really paying total attention because, by the way, the nav system sent me the correct way going to BWI.
It's always different coming back. It's always different.
Yes. So here's the thing.
Because of the one-way streets.
Before I realize it, it has put me on 395-95 going into downtown Baltimore.
Not a good choice
so,
on a Friday night.
By the way, it's a divided highway on Friday and an Orioles game. So now I am stuck. And so I'm seething. Because the minute I realize what's going on, I'm like, wait a minute.
How do I get out of here?
That's Camden. What is going on? So I'm now stuck trying to get onto 83 from downtown Baltimore. Okay. Uh-huh. And it's bumper to bumper. Uh-huh. And it's not routing me correctly. It's trying to put me on Utah Street. And I'm low on gas.
Yeah,
so because of course my plan was once I'm on the highway, there's multiple.
Gas.
Well, downtown Baltimore,
there isn't.
That's like trying to find
there's no
like
gas
a Tesla charging station.
There's no gas stations
right?
downtown. Nope.
So I'm running on fumes. I'm like going on all these streets I don't know. I'm figuring I'm going to be carjacked at some point, right?
Good plan.
I'm going through these neighborhoods where I'm like this doesn't look good. So I finally get back on 83, and now I see I have to get gas. Must get gas within the next 5 miles. So I jump off at the next intersection, or the next exit. And it's, again, not the best area, but it's also traffic everywhere. So there's an Exxon station.
Mm-hmm.
Pull into this Exxon station. Yes, we made it. Gas up. I get out of my car, fill it with gas, and I start looking. I'm observing the surrounding intersection, okay, which is cars like ants mm-hmm. everywhere. And what I notice, now I have to try to paint this picture. There are two exits. So what I have to do to get back on the highway where I need to go is I need to turn left out of the gas station to go back on this road. And what I notice is the one exit, you can't even exit because the cars that are going, let's just say, north are all pulled up to the light in front in three lanes going in that direction. So mm-hmm. you can't actually pull out there if you want to turn left, okay? You have to turn right. And if you turn right, you will spend an hour driving in the wrong direction in a traffic snake that goes who knows where. It goes to the prison. It goes to the quarry.
Charles Point.
I don't know. But the chances of turning around within a half an hour, gone.
Mm-hmm.
The only other exit that you can go out, okay, so if you want to try to make a left-hand turn and then turn left again,
yeah.
Well, the entire left-hand turn lane that you have to get in stretches for a mile. So you can't get in. So I literally walked into the store, and I said to the guy behind the bulletproof glass,
good neighborhood you're in there.
Is there like a trick to how you're supposed to get back on 83 North? And this guy was basically, me no live here.
I walk.
You go drive car on road and there, highway there. Like, thank you.
Thanks for nothing.
So here's what I wound up having to do. Uh-huh. This turned into like a Mad Max thing. I had to basically, I don't even have a signal. That line of cars that were three deep that are... I basically, when the light turned green before anybody moved, I gunned it across the entire intersection in front of all the cars that almost crashed into me and then did like one of these fast and furious, you know, tail sliding turns.
You didn't hit anybody.
I guarantee you that if it was a typical non-aggressive driver, they would have been stuck at that gas station until 9 o'clock at night.
That would have been
there was literally no way to exit to go in the direction I wanted to go. So that was just astonishing to me.
That is astonishing. So you took your 500 horsepower car and you just rammed it where you needed to be.
What
pretty
I
pretty much
literally when the light turned green, I had started inching out so they could see me. I basically pulled in front of all the traffic that had the green
light.
Did
you get any horns at you?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you care?
No. I was like, listen, it's either this or I'm going to die here of starvation at this Exxon.
Now, folks, that's the second time I've heard that story, and it's even funnier the second time.
Yeah, I told you this before.
It's even funnier the second time because I could see him doing this exact thing.
I actually wanted to make a little video, a vlog.
A vlog.
Like showing people, do you see here how you literally can, it's sort of like the, what is it, the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yes.
It, once you come to this Exxon station,
you cannot get out.
That's it. It's Hotel California. Oh. You can never, you can check in and pump your
European
gas.
European vacation, Big Ben Parliament, never get over.
You're never leaving.
That's crazy, and I'm glad you made it back.
My rare skills allowed me to escape.
You think your skills are that rare, huh?
Yeah, more rare than
maybe
not.
It's guts. You had the guts to pull out in front of a mile long line of traffic and race across. But you got on okay. So that's
right.
Good.
Because remember, I didn't have a signal. I was racing across with no light.
Good thing there was no cop there. Because I think he probably would have.
Actually, I think he would have sympathized with me and said,
he would have sympathized.
Well done, sir. You're the first person to have escaped this Exxon in the last decade.
You should have just driven south to D.C. and tried to turn around.
Do you see all these desiccated corpses that are piled behind the station? These people never left.
Oh, my. That's so, so, so true. So I have my restaurant, but it wasn't service, and you had your car, but it wasn't bad drivers. It was just location for you. And so what did you learn from this? What did we talked about this the other day. What did you learn from
this? Well, the one thing I learned and I need to figure out is you cannot trust the navigation system. And I want to know, to your point, why does it change the route?
I don't know that. And that's the, because every time I come back north from BWI, it's a different way than when I came in. And I don't know if that's based on traffic patterns. There's an expectation that there's traffic on the one side and they don't want me to go that way or what it is. I don't know, but it's always different coming back. And I don't know the way well enough to not trust the nav. I mean, I'd kind of use the nav cause I don't know my way around Baltimore that well, but I don't know. That's a good question.
Look, traffic patterns. I don't know what algorithm exists that would funnel you into downtown Baltimore.
They didn't have the Orioles schedule. So they didn't know that
it was 5 o'clock on Friday. Oh, why would it do that?
Yeah, they got the marina there. They got it's Inner Harbor. There's lots of traffic already. It was a nice night. Yeah, I don't understand, man.
Reason I wasn't paying attention because, you know what to do. You put me on 695. We're good. Wait a minute.
This isn't 695.
Wait a minute. There's the statue of Cal Ripken. What is going on?
So I told him the other day, I said, you need to make sure you have enough gas to get there and get back without having to stop. Because you never want to stop in Desert
Island. And I thought about that, but I realized, I've got enough because I'm on 695. I can go wherever I want.
Sure.
Get easily back on.
No.
And instead, I was at the Exxon Alcatraz and almost trapped there. I would have never seen my family again.
We're glad you made it back. I think that's all we got tonight, folks.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for joining
enough.
Me and us. This is our 200th episode, so I've got a couple things from previous episodes that I put together as we go out.
Others will have to tell me about it.
Yes. Tony will not listen, so he will not know. Thanks for joining us. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
Our sponsor tonight is Generalissimo Biller. For all of your tech needs, big or small, think the general, Generalissimo Biller. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Biller's Barbecue Sauce. When you think sweet and savory, think that lip-smacking good Biller's Barbecue Sauce. Mmm, good. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Thompson's Tasty Treats, now with extra red dye number 5. It's not the same without the extra red. Thompson's Tasty Treats.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Hannah Tree production.